south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Now, you know, more and more gringos are becoming expats, that is, getting out of Dodge or making plans to get out of Dodge. And as I'm traveling through Latin America, I'm doing a big trek through many countries right now, I'm running into them all the time. And funny enough, they're finding for themselves that being on the gringo tourist trail is not such a very good idea. Not if you want to save money, not if you want to learn the culture, not if you want to learn the language, and definitely not if you're looking for some cool business niches to be able to jump in on the cheap right away. Which brings me to this quite unusual little boots on the ground story. It happened to me just yesterday. Now, for a little background here, you know, when I go to a Latin country and stay for a couple of weeks, a month, or who knows, I always hook up with a Latin lawyer or a Latin law firm. And I don't do it by going into a gringo bar and asking around or throwing a dart at the professional classified ads or even looking it up in OLX.com. Man, I do my homework way ahead of time. So by the time I end up in that country, I've already set up an appointment or two. So I've accumulated a nice list of lawyers I've actually visited personally in various Latin countries. And that makes a big difference in the relationship. Anyway, so as luck would have it, I was sitting in a nice air-conditioned lawyer's office because, you know, right now I happen to be in a coastal Latin town. Things get very hot down here. And believe me, if you're in an office building or tower and they don't have air conditioning, you're going to sweat your ass off. So while I'm sitting there playing the waiting game, who walks through the door but a very short but good-looking Italian guy with his wife, a good-looking Latina, and they both had unmistakable Jersey accents. So naturally, as it works out here in Latin America, when you meet a gringo from wherever he is, you're best friends right away because, you know, it's as if you lived in the same neighborhood up in the States, right? And then comes the encapsulated version of why you've left the States. Why the hell you getting out of Dodge? And truly, if you're in a Latin American lawyer's office and a gringo or gringas happens to walk in, you know they're there because they're either out of Dodge already or are making plans to get the hell out very soon. Yep, the gringos you meet in the lawyer's office are serious about getting the hell out. That, as opposed to meeting gringos on the gringo tourist trail like Cancun, Costa Rica, whatever. When you get to talking to them, you're likely to get an earful of BS. 99% of them say they're coming back, buying land, going to move there forever or retire, but they never do. You know, it's that tropical energy, the air, the ambience that hits you right when you get off the plane in any tropical place. Puts you in a completely different mindset. That's what vacations are for, right? Happens to most everyone. Suddenly you're thinking, man, this is where I want to be. This is where I want to retire. This is the place I'm going to go to when I jump off my treadmill up in the States. Yep, that's exactly what's in the mind of 99.9% of gringos and expats who go to a Latin country on vacation, which is why they so eagerly sign up for idiotic timeshare promotions or any kind of exotic deal someone presents in a glossy pamphlet or seminar that looks like it might make some sense. But if you analyze that stuff closely, like you would a deal up in the first world, you often see they're offering returns that are too good to be true. And these days, it's palm and teak and avocado and coconut, mango and papaya plantation deals. Yeah, you might have seen the blurbs and you might already be on some of those mailing lists. And isn't it funny that always, it's not a Latin guy, but some gringo or European trying to sell you shares or getting you to buy sections at a project. And there's always that guarantee or implied guarantee that it's going to put out 10, 20, 30, even 40% returns a year. By the way, I got a file just full of those kind of promotions and blurbs. And you know what? I've never met a single person who'd gotten into one of these scams, and most of them are scams, that actually made enough to get his or her initial investment back. Isn't it funny? I know of no one who's been able to recoup their initial investment, but I do know a handful of gringos who've been completely ripped off. Man, do those odds suck or what? But you know, something happens to gringos and expats as soon as they get off the plane. Suddenly, you've let down your guard in a lot of different ways. And most often, the reason why you're on vacation in a foreign country is because you did pretty well up in the States. You got a nice job, or maybe you're the boss and you started a company from scratch. could be all your life you put in 60 and 80 hour work weeks because you are the boss. You're the conservative, cautious, and methodical type, and you know exactly how tough it is to make a buck. Until you get off the plane in Panama, Costa Rica, Cancun, the usual suspects. All the usual stops gringos make when they're on their first few trips to Latin America. And that's exactly where gringo and Latino con artists have honed their skills to a fine art. Then suddenly, some guy at a desk at the airport or your hotel invites you to a free seminar on how to make dough on a mango or teak or avocado plantation deal, whatever. And there you are, not wanting to lose out on the deal of the century, sucking down cup after cup of Cafe Mocha de Java on the house, but nothing's for nothing, you know. So there you are, along with 30 other clueless gringos just like yourself, looking at slide after slide of beautiful mango, avocado, teak farms, whatever, till it's almost a case of death by PowerPoint. Hey, I've been there. I've seen these guys. It's just a regurgitation of the old timeshare marketing schemes of the 80s and 90s, only they're doing it with mango, macadamia, and teak plantations down here. And funny thing, not a week goes by where one of my listeners doesn't send me a blurb saying, Johnny, is this a good deal? Check this out. It's a chance to get on the ground floor of some kind of plantation scheme or, even more lately, colonial real estate rehab deals. Oh, let me say something about that. You know, there are a lot of old sections of town in every big Latin city where once upon a time, when people still used the horse and carriage, the wealthy Latin colonial movers and shakers lived. And most of the original owners and their families are long gone. They moved to the burbs, the related ones who are still around, that is. And now, wouldn't you know it, due to lag time, developers are snapping these places up because the buildings are tremendous. Though, generally, they're in terrible shape and in bad sections of town because the rent's cheap and there's lots of traffic, noise, and lots of street people and crime. Just like a lot of the old historic districts in big cities up in the States. Yep, you know the drill. It's big city gentrification. Yep, it's landed here in Latin America, finally. Pretty much like it happened up by you 20, 30, even 50 years ago. You know, older sections of the city get run down. People leave. Rents go down. You get a lot of crime and street people. A poorer class of people moves in. And then, surprise, surprise, people with class and culture, meaning the gays, they come in, snap up the stuff, revitalize it completely because they're meticulous about what they do and they've got class. Hey, you've seen that in action up in New York, Chicago, all the big cities. And suddenly it's all revitalized, terrific walking spaces, great restaurants, bars, hotels, parks, and galleries. So in a once kind of bombed out area, now you've got street art, culture, music fairs and stuff. And suddenly it's a tourist attraction. It's the place to go and hang. Well, it took a while, lag time, of course, but that's exactly what's happening in older rundown areas of big Latin cities. And now, of course, because I'm on everybody's expat get-out-of-dodge list, I'm getting blurbs like that in my inbox all the time. And who do you think's putting these projects together now? Why, of course, it's expat gringos who formerly were developers and real estate agents up in the States. And most all of them got blown out in the big real estate boom bust around 2008. Many of them lost most everything, and some came down to Latin America. And wouldn't you know, they saw another golden opportunity. History could repeat itself. And they didn't even have to reinvent the wheel, get a new game plan, simply because of the lag time. And man, you know, they've got the photos, the marketing down from way back when, and the pro formas, fantastic literature coming out. But man, it's a sucker's game, and you know who's going to make the money, of course? The developers and the guys putting out the prospectus. Because, you know, the worst kind of owner or landlord to be is an absentee owner landlord. And that's what you'll be if you buy into one of these projects. All right, so I guess I beat that dead horse enough. Anyway, where were we? Oh, yeah. We're talking about sitting in the lawyer's office next to a nice couple from Jersey. And what do you think they were doing in that office? Well, since we're both gringos, we're bosom buddies, right? So it didn't take long for me to find out. They're purchasing a property, maybe 10 minutes walk from the ocean. 3/4 acre pool, about 3,000 square feet. I saw the pictures. Fantastic. $160K. Cash, of course, because getting financing's a bitch here in Latin America. Oh, but that's not the only reason they were in the office. You see, he, the guy, is getting his permanent residency in the country. Going through that process, getting things apostilled, and it's one of those Latin countries you have to get an FBI report. So I actually went down with him and the lawyer. We drove about a couple miles down to the country's National Police Station headquarters, where they'll fingerprint you for around 10 bucks. Oh, and by the way, you've never seen such a bunch of fat-ass slugs sitting around on their duffs. I'm talking about dozens and dozens of lard-ass slugs working there at that police station. Oops, did I say work? My mistake. Though at least when it comes to fingerprints, they'll do it the correct way. That eliminates one big problem. That means you don't have to try to give it a shot yourself. You know, you can do that by downloading the paperwork from the FBI's website, and they'll tell you how to do it. But man, they're picky. If you get it just slightly wrong, they'll reject it. So it's true, getting an FBI background check or good contact report is a lot more difficult than getting your local sheriff's report. However, the good news is there are still a few Latin countries that will allow you to get a sheriff's report, like, for example, Guatemala. But not many, and all the Latin countries are slowly going to the FBI report. So know that if you download that FBI report, you can try to do the fingerprinting yourself. Good luck with that. I've heard that people will download the form and go to Office Depot and buy an ink pad and give it a shot. Chances are, though, you'll get rejected because there's more than a bit of a learning curve on doing it. However, if you've been in the slammer or drunk tank a few times and have been printed, you probably got it down already. So then how can you be sure you're going to get it right? Well, if you're in the States and need an FBI report, you can go down to your local sheriff's department or police department and tell them you want to be fingerprinted, and they'll do it for you on that piece of paper. Then you send it into the FBI and all that. But if you're in a foreign country like I am right now and you have to get fingerprinted for an FBI report, you'll have to hook up with a local immigration lawyer because they know all the tricks. Like, for example, what happened yesterday at the National Police Station when the lawyer took our little Italian Joyzy guy down to the station to get some prints. Oh, and by the way, there was a little gringo advantage incident going on in the cop shop lobby when we were trying to check in. So we walked in the door, me, the New Jersey guy, and the lawyer. Our first stop, getting past the lady at the front desk. She checks you in, writes your name down, gives you a little ID, and takes an official ID from you, passport, driver's license, whatever. Oh, and by the way, when we walked into that place, there were no scanners to walk through. Imagine that. Walk into a big police building like that, and you don't have any scanners. Talk about going back in time, huh? Gotta love it. Anyway, the lawyer had an ID. I had an ID. But our little Italian New Jersey friend left his with his wife back at the lawyer's office a couple miles away with bad traffic, maybe an hour's drive. And the nice lady at the front desk said, "You cannot get in here without a proper ID." Now, as usual, the lawyer was on his smartphone, punching away, doing other stuff, not paying much attention. Lawyers are like that down here, too. That's when I said to the lady in Spanish, of course, because, you know, we're off the Gringo Tourist Trail. And by the way, our New Jersey buddy married to a Latina up in Jersey. She was a second generation born in New Jersey. So her parents are Latino, so she speaks 100% Spanish and English. And this is what I don't get. Oftentimes, you run into a pure gringo up in the States married to a Latina, and he speaks no Spanish. I don't know how that happened. And that was the case with this guy, too. So, to break the stalemate, I said to the lady behind the counter, "Have a good look at this gringo. Look at his face. A great guy. A credit to all the Italians in his family and New Jersey. He's so happy to be here. Wants to be a resident of your country. Just an all-around nice guy in love with your country, and you won't let him go in and get fingerprinted because he forgot to bring his ID." She smiled and said, "Go ahead." Man, in the States, that would never fly. Anyway, just another one of those little subtle advantages you have when you're a gringo. Oh, and by the way, when we walked downstairs to the fingerprinting area, there was maybe 4 or 5 people sitting in chairs waiting. They ushered us to the head of the line, right past everyone else. Yep, the gringo advantage rides again. Little details I know, but you get the point. So where am I going with the story? Well, listen to this. Now, this couple was fairly young for wanting to get out of Dodge, and I understand since his wife had Hispanic parents, would be a logical step for them if they had a plan B to get the hell out and go to a Latin country where her Spanish skills would give them a huge leg up. That means it would be nothing for them to adapt off the gringo tourist trail where all the great deals are. Well, first thing this guy told me is that all of her relatives up in the States said, "You're nuts to go back to Latin America. We escaped there." They just couldn't understand. They didn't get it. Only, like he said, his wife's parents' generation were positioned perfectly to take full advantage of the American dream, and they were decent, successful people. Solid middle class, nice house, car, the whole works. Something the average Latino back where they come from could never hope to achieve. But like this little gringo guy said, those days are long gone, but they don't know it. For one thing, he said, the parents who immigrated from Latin America decades ago speak perfect English, or almost perfect English. They assimilated perfectly, unlike what's happening today. So the fact is, he said, it's her side of the family that thinks they're nuts for leaving. And he comes from a big Italian family who came over practically 100 years ago, he said, and they get it, at least the ones that do travel outside the country. But the ones that have never left the United States don't get it. In other words, he said, the more you see of the world, the more you realize how f***ed up the U.S. is. In fact, his wife, with a master's degree, taught public school. And at first, he said, she liked her job, but soon enough, it was like banging your head against a wall, and she'd come home every night depressed and frustrated. She knows firsthand public school in the States is shot. So he said she walked away, and now down here, she's going to start her own private school. Like he said, it's something she could never do up in the States because you have to jump through so many bureaucratic hoops and fill out so many forms and get so many permits and inspections. In fact, insurance costs alone would prohibit a startup. But down here in Latin America, it's a snap, especially if you've got teacher certification from a U.S. school like she has. When I mentioned they're pretty young to be doing this, I'd say he's around maybe 47, she's maybe 42. Owen, by the way, when I asked this guy what he did for a living, and of course he's quit his job now, he was a surveyor, so he did pretty well. And she, a public school teacher, did okay. But still, I said, look, you're 47, you're quitting your job, she's quitting, you probably won't get any pensions then, just Social Security, but that won't kick in for another 15 years, and you'll get it, but it won't be worth dick by then. So then I asked, how you doing all this? He said, well, I'll tell you. When I was around 6 years old, I had a little accident at an amusement park in New Jersey. Lost my big toe. Ever since then, I've been getting an annuity every year, and it's up to $2,000 a month. And it's indexed to inflation. I get it the rest of my life. And I said, you're kidding. What a story. And then he proceeded to exhibit his symptom, pressed on his tennis shoe, and sure enough, there was no big toe. Now, you longtime listeners know that if you're off the Gringo Tourist Trail and you're making $2,000 a month, you could easily live a first world middle class life on that. Oh, and by the way, because this guy gets an indemnity, it's a sure thing, comes in every month as long as he lives, he could take loans against it too. How about that? It's the greatest collateral there is, especially if you're a young guy like him. So anyway, this guy and his wife, by the way, they have a kid, hers from a previous. They're well on their way into their plan B, even with the tidal wave of flack they're getting from the folks back home. Now, in talking to this salt of the earth guy, it revealed a lot about what's happening with the diminishing middle class up in the States. He really had a good grasp on things, and he knows a collapse is coming, even though he doesn't listen to alternative media. Which I thought rather odd, yet encouraging, because here's a guy who's figuring it out for himself. He isn't listening to Alex Jones, reading Zero Hedge. He doesn't subscribe to alternative newsletters, anything like that. Just as mentioned, working class, salt of the earth type. He said he and his buddies have discussions all the time. The basic theme, what the hell's happening to our country? Anyway, it turns out no matter who you meet, you always learn something. And here's what I learned. And you listeners working on your plan B really should take note of this. Now, this guy, like I said, is a surveyor. And as it turns out, remember the big hurricane that came up the coast and hit New York and New Jersey? I forgot the name of it. I mean, it was a disaster. You know what he told me? Being a surveyor, after the carnage, there was a lot of rebuilding going on. So he got many jobs surveying the coastal areas for insurance companies during the reconstruction phase. And he said, the house he just bought here in Latin America on the beach is actually 10 minutes from the beach, and he wanted it that way because, he said, even though his dream has always been to have a house right on the beach, he loves fishing, and you could call him scuba trash as defined by Captain Mango, and he looked at a lot of nice properties right on the beach but didn't bite. The reason, he said, was the damage he saw during that hurricane convinced him that a property has to be at least 25 feet in elevation higher than high tide, or you will sustain massive hurricane damage. So he decided on an even better margin of error, and his new house that he's moving into in 3 weeks, he said, is 100 feet above high tide. So that's the golden tip to glean from today's show. For all you gringo expat, gonna-bes and wannabes who are thinking about having a home on the beach or near the beach, it better be situated minimum 25 feet above high tide. And even that would be cutting it close. Because, now get this, in 2004, the tsunami generated by the Indonesian earthquake was approximately 30 feet tall when it struck Sri Lanka. And in 2011, that tsunami that struck Fukushima was about 50 feet tall. So even though tsunamis like that are very rare, why not, if you're going to have a beach house, set your minimum height at least 50 feet, which is actually a no-brainer, except for all those idiots who own really nice multi-million-dollar houses on coastal strips as close as they can possibly get to the water. Oh, and by the way, you'll find out in almost all Latin countries, you can get hurricane and flood insurance, but only if you live somewhat inland. They won't insure you if you're right on the beach. Then again, I only know of one person, and he's an upscale guy, the only one I know who's got homeowner's insurance at all. And guess what? The only reason he's got that is because he's got a cousin who's an insurance broker who keeps hammering on him to buy a policy every time he sees him at a family gathering. Hey, I know up in the States, everyone's got an insurance agent in the family, and they do the exact same thing. Always trying to hit up their relatives for policies because they're an easy target. Don't you just hate that? Could be worse. I have a friend in the States whose brother sells cemetery plots. So every time you're stuck in a corner talking to him, what do you think he's trying to do? The conversation gets morbid pretty fast. Talk about party poopers, huh? Oh, and one more thing about this little Italian Jersey guy. Very nice, personable guy, by the way. I just had to ask. I said, as far as losing your big toe and getting $2,000 a month for life, if you had to do it all over again, would you give the dough back for that big toe? He said, hell no. I won the frickin' lottery. And I said, well, does it affect anything in your life, how you walk or how you swim, whatever? He said, you adapt, and you adapt to the $2,000 a month, too. So in the end, he was in the right place, meaning he was in an amusement park that had great insurance coverage at the right time. All right, speaking of Latin lawyers, how about this email? And of course, I'll edit and paraphrase as we go along, add my comments and such. We'll keep it anonymous. We're into that. You should be too. All right, this email comes from a guy who was at my last Expat Insider Seminar. He's living here in Latin America now, found his niche, and he's got his plan B in full force. Anyway, he says, hey, Johnny, me, the wife, and the family are living permanently in Latin America now. Just bought brand new red mopeds. However, I did run into a disadvantage with having these new models. Our lawyer, he said, made us certified copies of our registration papers and cards, so we don't have to carry our original registration cards with us. Our lawyer said it was much safer to keep those cards, called circulation cards, at home in a safe spot, because if we were to lose those cards, it's a hell of a big mess trying to get them replaced. Anyway, he says, we're about to go through a little town called San Jose Pinula when we were pulled over at one of those cop checkpoints. There were three street cops there in fluorescent green chalecos, that would be vests, and three regular police, the ones in black, the national police. Of course, they asked us for our papers, looked at them and said, our certified copies were not valid. We had to have the originals. Now, we played the dumb gringo act in front of the police. We've been pulled over before, and the less Spanish we found you speak, the faster they let you go. Whoa, me Johnny here again. Remember on the last show I mentioned that I neglected to pull the stupid gringo act when I got grilled and shaken down for $20 by a couple of motorcycle cops just the other day? Anyway, here's more proof why it's often a good idea to just keep playing stupid gringo, especially when you're off the gringo tourist trail where the cops don't speak much English or zero English. Now, if you try that ploy on the tourist trail, it just won't work because the cops know enough English to extort. So it's basically an exclusive ploy to use when you're off the trail. Anyway, he said, the cops told us our certified copies were not valid. We must have our original. Now, playing dumb gringos in front of the police this time didn't seem to be working. So I thought, oh yeah, I'll show you. And I called up our lawyer instantly. He answered the phone. I gave my phone to the police. And I don't know what he told them on the phone, but man, the police gave me my phone back in a hurry. And when I grabbed the phone, my lawyer was still connected. I said, hey, what happened? And my lawyer said, don't worry, they're letting you go. I said, why'd they do that? My certified papers were okay. Probably just a ploy to extort money from you. That's what we figured, and of course the cops did let us go. Then he said, Johnny, you know, when me and my wife first came down here to Latin America, we didn't have a lot of money to begin with, but believe me, it was well worth paying for that lawyer. This is way better than being left off on our own in a country we're not familiar with. Besides, my Spanish sucks. Thanks again for all your help, Johnny. Signed, BR. All right, just a few comments regarding that. One thing I always recommend, and I bring this up at my Expat Insider seminars, I say, look, ask your lawyer to make up a little package that's got certified documents in it and a cover letter that says you've had all your documents certified by a lawyer with the lawyer's name and phone number. And his WhatsApp, of course. I mean, you can't get your lawyer down here unless you've got WhatsApp. And if and when you get pulled over by the cops at one of those stops, you just hand them that little package. Everything will be in order. It'll all be in Spanish. And there'll be really no way any cop can extort money from you. And if there's a further problem, get on the phone to your lawyer and have him talk to the lard-ass cop in charge. And who knows, maybe your lawyer will charge you $50 or $100 for that package, but it is a lifesaver. And it's a one-time cost. You just leave it in your glove compartment. Or if you're going to have a motorcycle, which I don't recommend, put it in the storage compartment on your vehicle. Because, you know, it is 100% true. You should never carry your original documents in your car or motorcycle. Especially not the title. Never the original credit card-sized laminated piece of paper called La Tarjeta de Circulación, which means circulation card. That basically shows the car was bought legally and taxes paid when it was brought into the country. That's the thing you want certified by your lawyer. Again, you never want to keep the original in your car. Leave it in your house or with your lawyer. So then what's the original good for? Well, if you want to sell the car, you have to produce the original. And number two, if you want to drive your car around Latin America to other countries, when you go across borders, you'll have to show the original. But within the country you bought your car, a certified copy is all you'll need. Which begs the question, what happens if you're pulled over at a stop and you phone up your lawyer because you want your lawyer to talk to the cop, as in BR's case, and your lawyer just doesn't answer? Well, no Latin lawyer is an island. There's always a staff and maybe one or two or more other lawyers. So you just make sure you've got all the contact numbers for everyone in his office. So if your guy doesn't answer, just go down the list and eventually someone will pick up who can work it out for you. And finally, here's some news that's kind of sad, but in a way funny. Did you know that a Venezuela TV station was just gearing up to run their version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Man, talk about lag time. How long ago was that famous in the States? 25 years ago. Anyway, production of these programs takes time. When they finally were ready to put it on the air, they changed the title to Who Wants to Be a Billionaire. And even then, hyperinflation has been galloping along so fast, they decided to just scrap the whole idea. Because in that moment, they made the decision to cancel it. A billion bolivars would only buy you a week's worth of groceries. You hear that, all you Bernie Sanders supporters? Socialism's great. It really works at first until you run out of other people's money.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.